Hello. Well, thank you again for just sharing your work. It was really beautiful, the things that you shared. And I think I was wondering, both of you had a lot of your art inspired by, I guess, excavating that history through your grandfathers. And I was wondering, I know there's been stories that at least I've heard where people who of that like generation who have now obviously become that grandfather generation, was it hard to like take them back when trying to ask those questions about how that history was, whether it be like, because a lot of obviously traumatic experience occurred. And I wonder if how did you navigate those things, if you were met with like kind of a difficulty in getting to know those stories, or if it wasn't, like, how did you figure out how to handle all those traumas and put them in your art form in a way that like paid homage and didn't like make it sound like didn't make it sound too horrid, and also like know that they're your family members and you want to like do them justice when putting their art out or their stories out there.
I think part of the work I'm doing is trying to answer some of those questions. My grandfather died when I was 18, and he had Alzheimer's for at least 15 years, so I never had a conversation with him about this history. But I also, the question about paying homage or doing justice is interesting, because I'm not sure his conception of justice would be the same as mine. I mean, I don't know what his conception of justice was or if he had one. I think that one of the benefits of being a descendant of someone is that you can, not only are you inheriting the experiences they underwent, but in a way you're inheriting what they weren't able to complete of their own thinking, their own experience. So I feel like in a lot of ways, I'm allowing myself anyway to sort of imagine what might have been possible if my grandfather had lived a different kind of life. And part of that is just being a citizen. And sort of like the truly bitter, bitter reward of being an American citizen when it was such a struggle for him to become one. And the freedom that gives me to speak about certain things in a way that he was actually not able to. But to return to my original answer, I don't know. I think I'm trying to figure that out.
だいたい質問が僕はひいおじいちゃんなので、もちろん僕は会ったことがないし、父も会ったことがないし、おばあちゃんだけなんですけど会ったことがあるのは。でおばあちゃんはひいおじいちゃんのことがすごく好きで、なぜかっていうとそのアメリカから来たからっていうのがすごく強くて、で僕は子供の頃からおばあちゃんにあなたは顔がそっくりだって言われ続けてきて、であと眉毛が同じところに切れてるんですけど、そういう話もずっとされたので、こうある意味そのちょっとマインドコントロールではないんですけど、そういうものが僕のおばあちゃんからありました。で、
まあ、Okay, so maybe so I never met my great grandfather and I heard stories from my grandmother, and she really liked my great grandfather because he was an American, and also she would tell him that he looked just like his great grandfather, and one of the characteristics of that was that his eyebrow. It's split right here, and so that's what his grandmother used to remind him of. And he said that type of experience has sort of given him a little bit of a bias towards maybe a favorable bias towards his great grandfather.
でそれとその僕がそのやっぱりその外国でてかそのドイツで10年今もう15年になるんですけど、そのまあまあ僕のひいおじいちゃんと同じようにそんなにドイツ語上手くない。でそんなにこういい位置にもいないみたいなことも含めて、まあすごく同じようなその彼に対してのシンクロみたいなものがすごくあって、でそのモチベーションが多分僕はその、その曽祖父と自分のシンクロニゼーションみたいなものがそののモチベーションがすごく強いので、あの実際にそのキャンプのことは聞いたことがないけど、僕の家にはいろんなものがあったり、そのキャンプから持って帰ってきたものがあったりとかしたので、あとは自分で調べたりとかして、あのこうそのなんていうのかな、直接あの僕はやっぱり日系アメリカ人ではないけど、そのこう彼とシンクロすることによって自分のモチベーションがこうどんどん上がっていくというか、っていうこと、モチベーションというかこう、ちょっと難しいですけど、すみません。
So he in Japanese he's saying motivation, but that motivation I think when you translate to English it's more like like his interest or his emotion, emotional connection, let's say. But anyway, he mentioned about, so he's been living in Germany for over 15 years. Mm. And just like his great-grandfather, his language skills in German is not great. And perhaps his class, his sort of economic class is not as, you know, as he said, his working class. So he sees this overlap and similarity, and his life synchronizing, just like his great-grandfather. And so that's been the his interest. And also, he's seen the articles that his great-grandfather brought back from the concentration camp. So all of those makes him interested in this topic.
This is the strangest mic of all time. So you guys, building off of that question, you both talked about how your experience mirrors, or there's this sort of mirroring, or trying to make sense of this relationship to your grandfather, who in a lot of ways, or great-grandfather, in Isaac's case, in your case. But then, how did you discover each other's work, and do you feel there's a certain present mirroring? Because you're both engaged in very similar projects in a lot of ways, but in different contexts and in different genres, and perhaps coming to it from totally different places. So maybe speak about how you met or how you learned about each other's work and how that's like to have somebody who is similarly engaged.
I don't remember.
What?
Hiroshi.
Oh yeah, okay.
My friend Hiroshi,
filmmaker.
Filmmaker. なんか彼がそのブランドンって人がいるからコンタクト取れってすごい強く言って、で彼の作詞を見た時になんか僕はすごいタッチするものがあって、でもちろん僕英語はそんなにできないんだけど、なんかすごいタッチするものがあったので彼にメールをしました。
So his friend, a filmmaker Hiroshi, very strongly suggested that Aisuke contact Brandon, and but he had read his work and was very touched by his work. So he emailed Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Well, one, I was thinking about how two of the like connective factors in your work is related to hair.
Mm-hmm.
So that handful of blonde hair and then your eyebrow.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's not an answer to your question. But I think, so I wrote a book about my grandfather that's coming out in June from City Lights, and there's some postcards over there. But But it's basically like a book about me putting my body into places where my grandfather was. So in a lot of ways, I feel like Aisuke's work is like the visual, maybe like a visual aspiration for me, like a visual version of what I do in writing. Which again, I think his work and, you know, all these things are just questions that I'm continually mulling over in my own mind of what it means to be, not only to be in some way haunted by these figures, but also clearly to haunt them. Because as I'm looking at his film of you standing in different spots in San Francisco, it's when I see that, it's like he's the ghost, right? Just standing really still, it's like that, you know, there's a ghostly presence of the great-grandchild to the grandchild, which is just another thing that I'm thinking about, you know, what's the function of that? And yeah. So I'm learning a lot from what he's doing.
I guess I wonder, too, is there a certain feeling where you're haunting each other's work, or is that also an active, like when you're building work, is there that relationship too?
That would be great. I mean, I don't know that many people who are doing work that is so similar in different media.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel the sense of haunting. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe we'll see what happens after tonight, right?
Yeah. Yes. We can do it. I'm very welcome. Yeah.
And somewhere in something that you wrote, Brandon, you talk also in a generational sense, but really about what it is to inherit a history and how. Like, for instance, you were saying that you pointed out at some point at least a half a dozen Japanese American writers who have felt compelled to return to the camp among people who are now in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering about that, you know, I don't know, just as something that we are compelled to do in that sense, who have inherited a history that's unfinished in this
right.
way and a history that's. That has involved gross injustice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that anytime somebody experiences an arrest in their life, that part of them stops and becomes eternal. That, you know, whether you're arrested or whatever it might be, a moment when you're detained or you're excluded or deported or whatever it might be, I feel like that part of that person stops and becomes eternal and then becomes this communal thing that descendants can take up and continue. But there's no end to it. I mean, it being eternal means there's no end to it. And that's why I say that it's like a form of insanity or a form of hellishness, in the sense that in hell you are suffering the same thing over and over and over again for eternity. So for me, I think that my form of being in hell is writing about this eternal arrest, if that makes sense.
I agree that kind of repetition and revisitation is hellish. I just recently went to see the place where my great-grandmother's and then another place where my great-grandfather is from. And I've also been writing about it. And so I'm wondering for both of you, what kind of research mediates the imagination, the imaginary occupation of a place that might be the real place that they're from, mm-hmm. but that also might not be relevant because it's no longer ever the real place. And then also, what do you, sometimes I think that my great-grandparents would say, stop wasting your time. Like, go do something else. We didn't talk about this because it's not worth talking about. So I'm curious about those two things, the kind of research that makes you feel like you're there and the other thing, or pretend you're there.
実際おばあちゃんとかおじいちゃんがそんなことやったら、そんなことやらないで、もっと有意義なことやれって言われて。はいはいはいはい。で、それをどう自分のどういうふうにプロセスするのかって。一つは、僕は、今、サンフランシスコステートでウェスリーのところで、ウェスリーアメリカンヒストリーを勉強してるので、1年間だけだったけど、それが一つの、リサーチの一つというか、もうちょっと体系的にこう、そのヒストリーをするとか、あとは友達と、その、
So to the first part of the question, so being right here at San Francisco State and working with or studying with Wesley, under Wesley, who was just here, is one thing, and to study the history, but also he's made friends in the Bay Area, and then talking to Japanese Americans, and just being right here has been a great resource for him.
で、 2番目は、 まあ、 その 自分 が やりたい から やってる ので、 他 に 理由 は ない です ね。 だ から その やりたい から やってる から、 まあ、 うちの 家族がどう思ってるかっていうと分からないんですけど、まあ僕がやりたいというか、なんて言うんだろう、分かんないです。なんか僕、これはなんか自分の中でもセットアップされてるから逃れられないというか、なんかその離れられないので、今のところで、あと僕の興味はその個人的なポイントから、いわゆるその自分のひいおじいちゃんのことを
リサーチすることが目的だけど、でもそれとはその今の日本とアメリカのこととか、そのもうちょっとこう広いポリティックスみたいなものにつながる、その交差点みたいなことをこう僕は探っているので。So he says that in regards to your second question, he can't get away from this subject. So he doesn't know what his family thinks about this project, and also. His hope is that through the very specific stories of his grandfather, that it casts a wider net about politics in Japan and the U.S., and finding that sort of intersection.
なんかあともう一つ、なんかやっぱりその日本のモダニゼーションっていうことに対して、なんかなんだろうな、なんかその近代化したこと。
So, and through this work, he's trying to figure out what did the modernization of Japan mean? The good, the bad.
So he,
pointing out, you know, there was General Perry, and then also MacArthur at the end of the war. So that again, that connection with the U.S. and Japan.
Yeah, I asked Aisuke about if he ever felt like the burden of having to spend so much time thinking about his great-grandfather, and you said, I can't quit, I can't stop. And I feel similarly, although I want to, I'm kind of sick of talking about my great-grandfather, even though I can't stop. But to answer the research question, a lot of research. Whether any of that makes it into the writing is I don't know, but and a lot of that is like pilgrimages and going to every place, and but also like I said during the reading, is that my grandfather is just he's just like the portal through which I can investigate these issues that are present now, you know, especially in the United States, where every aspect of Japanese American incarceration is still being implemented. You know, that's history's not over, because all of the components are now being used in other ways to in basically what is essentially an ongoing state of exception, just in a more fragmented way. But yeah, the question about what would he think, and whether or not he or anyone would feel like I'm wasting my time. I mean, I think everything is a waste of time. I mean, it's, time doesn't care about what we do, you know? Time doesn't care whether or not we live or die. So it's, if any of my ancestors felt that way, you know, that's not up to me to care about what they feel about that, right? But also, again, thinking about I have the privilege of doing things that my ancestors couldn't do. So am I going to do nothing with that privilege, or am I going to talk and even interrogate their own relationship to their own history, right? I would hope that if I have grandchildren, they would do the same, because they're there to replace me and the biases in which I'm raised, you know. I'm going to become anachronistic, and I hope I do become anachronistic, so that my descendants can actually repair the damage that I've caused by wasting time or being alive or whatever.
Mine's a very quick one for Kondo-san. Which school, which Kunsthalle did you go to in Berlin? Which school?
Oh, what? Berlin at the university.
I'm sorry?
A Berlin Art University.
Oh, Kunsthalle?
A University of Art.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can talk to you about later.
Yeah, just on re. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for. Oh, it's not. Oh, okay. Thank you for coming here and sharing your work with us. There was something that you had mentioned about anger being sublimated in the memorials, right? And so I was wondering if you both are able to talk about the ways in which injustice and anger can't really be separated, no matter at what point in history we're discussing injustices, right? And so how do you feel anger works in terms of your work? Like, how does it, is it something that's productive? Is it something that does require some sublimation? Do you feel that maybe as an artist, there's a license to be able to harness that anger, to point to the kinds of various dimensions of injustice? You know, I don't know if that, but I noticed that in both of your works.
だけど、じゃあ、いや、最初。例えばなんか僕、キャンプのとこに、サンタアニータと、トーパーズに行ったんですけど、サンタアニータに行った時は、やっぱりその話で聞いて、というより実際に暑くて臭い。馬の小屋だから暑くて臭い。こんなに臭いものかっていうのが、やっぱり行くと分かる。 トーパーズはたまたま、すごく雨が降って、彼女に運転してもらったんですけど、行くまでにすごく大変だったし、着いたら歩いたらもう泥がすごくて、一歩でも二歩でも歩いたら泥がぐちゃぐちゃになるような感じですごく、やっぱり結構ハードな場所だなっていうことを思ったんですけど、そして普通にこう、ただ杖を持って歩くっていうことを考えてたんですけど、途中まで行ったらなんか怒りが込み上げてきて、振り回したんです。それはなんか本当にその、
At Santa Anita, about the anger, so he's visited two places, Santa Anita and Topaz. And in regards to Santa Anita, when he got there, he realized the physical experience of the heat and the odor was something that he experienced. At Topaz, Yukiko drove in the rain, and by the time they got there, it was muddy, and it was a really hard place to get there. And so that was the experience getting there. And then once he got there, he wasn't, the cane scene, it did turn into anger. He can't tell why that was, but, and it was unexpected, but yeah.
Yeah, that's actually amazing. I mean, to think about returning to the site of your ancestors' dehumanization is heartbreaking, right? I mean, we're watching a film and it's like a formal structure, but that's a heartbreaking situation. I mean, in a way, because a person's heart is broken, and it may be maybe he's receiving that from his ancestor, right? And it's, you don't know what kind of emotion is going to come out of that when the heart is broken. Anger and love are obviously very closely related, but you know, for my grandfather, I don't know what he was, the emotions that he was experiencing in during World War II or before or after. Obviously, I don't. But he was being surveilled. I mean, he couldn't exhibit anger. He couldn't be angry. He couldn't retaliate or resist. He wasn't a citizen. So, at every turn, he was facing potential statelessness. So again, I feel like the anger that was sublimated in him kind of started flowing down this subterranean stream and worked its way into me. I don't exist in a state of pure anger all the time, but it is a generative force, you know. Anger can contribute to accomplishing things, or calling things out, or shutting things down, or I don't know. I mean, and it does contribute to my writing. It might not look like anger. I try to write things that are not like totally confrontational, but it's there. And I think it's there in part because he couldn't let that part of himself be fully expressed.
And it seems like poetry and art is the counterpoint to memorials in many ways, like kind of a way, another form of another kind of expression to really to take hold of the anger that has been sublimated. I mean, I just really like the way you had mentioned, like, that one line in the work you read.
Oh, yeah.
Anger that's sublimated in memorials. And we continued, and it continues on and on, the time,
yeah.
You know. And when we look at what's happening with Muslim Americans, and, you know, well, we should be even more, you know,
yeah.
Up in arms about that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're non-white in America, anger is not permissible, right? It's seen as just more evidence of your inability to fit in. Whereas white Americans can express their anger and murder, you know, dozens of people, and it doesn't even matter, right? So I think people being cautioned to sublimate their anger is like a huge injustice, I guess, you know. It only reinforces the wound. It only makes that wound bigger and therefore more difficult to close, right? But it's also just one emotion among every emotion, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe one question?
Thanks for coming. coming and talking. I'm curious about sort of your, you guys make pilgrimages to campsites, but like Brandon, you went to Japan and wrote a book there before this book now. Aisuke, you're from Japan, but you've been in Berlin, but also right now in the US for a year. How is there some sign of, I mean, how does that work for you in terms of artists? Is there a sort of a psychic barrier there as you cross from one land to another?
What do you mean by psychic barrier crossing?
I don't want to say explain too much, but I feel like the Japanese American incarceration experience is kind of this experience rooted in the U.S., though in many ways it's not, because ancestors like my own, I'm Japanese American, my ancestors come from Japan, right? But there's a psychic split sometimes, I think, in terms of consciousness, like between Japanese Americans and maybe Japanese from Japan. But you, as you make that journey from one place to another, there's more connection, and I'm just curious how that might inspire your work or feed into your work.
I'm also half white, so there's like a triangulation going on. So I exist in the middle of that triangle. That's not yet an answer, that's just a barrier that I psychically have to know. You know, because half of my ancestry was the anger of half of my ancestry was the motivation to incarcerate the other half of my ancestry, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like 50-50, but it's,
僕は、まあ、その、もう日本に、まあ、23ぐらいで離れてて、ベルリンに住んで、もう15年ぐらい住んでるんで、まあその、海外に住むということ自体は、もうなんか、まあっていうか、普通になってて、自分の居場所というのが、どこなのかっていうのが、よくわからない。で、例えばなんか日本にいた時日本がすごく嫌 でベルリンに行ったら自分の居場所があると思ってベルリンに行ったらやっぱり居場所がなくてでベルリンからサンフランシスコに来てもまあそのとやっぱりこうなんかそのな自分がその常にこう外国人であるというのは日本にいてもベルリンに行ってもなんかこうサンフランシスコに来てもあんま変わらないというかもちろん日本だと国籍があるから僕は日本人だけどそうなんかそういう感覚っていうかさちょっとこうアウトサイダーというかなんか自分のこう本当に地に足がついてないというかこうっていう感覚自体はどこにでもあんまり変わらないっていう
それを作品に関係って、うん、
それはすごいすると思う多分それがなんか多分ひいおじいちゃんに対しての自分のシンパシーなんだと思いますひいおじいさんに対しての自分のシンパシーがそのエイリアンであるというか
So I've lived abroad, overseas, since I was 23. And as I said, I've lived in Berlin for 15 years. So living overseas is a normal for me. And when I was living in Japan, I felt out of place. Going to Berlin didn't fix that, nor did going to San Francisco. Fix that either, and I feel like a foreigner, although my nationality is Japanese. So this feeling of outsider is what must have compelled me to sort of sympathize with my great grandfather.
Thank you all very much.